All right, before we get started here, just a few things to take care of at the very, very top. I've always dreamed of having a podcast that has Patreon supporters. I listen to lots of podcasts where they have to take time to thank their patrons, and now I have one. I have Patreon patrons that support this podcast and support the other content that I make across the various platforms on the internet, and I'm so thankful for them. I am just so in love. I'm deeply and passionately in love with all of these Patreon supporters. I know that I've only been aware of them for a few weeks, but in those few short weeks, my life has changed dramatically. I've just been overwhelmed with this feeling that I want to marry every single one of them. I want to personally propose to every single one of them and have a separate wedding ceremony, except for two of them. Two of them are my parents, so not those two. But everyone else that's a Patreon patron, I want to get a big plural marriage to. I want to be married to all 57 of the 59 of these people. So, if you're not one of these people and you don't really care, I imagine you're going to skip forward, but you don't have to. You can also listen and hear and be like, I want to join. I want to join in on this really weird thing that Austin is doing where he's like planning on falling in love and marrying all these people who are donating to his show. That part is a joke, of course, but the real part is that I am very, very thankful and that you can support me now. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you would like to support this show and the creation of the other content that I make on the internet. So we're going to take just a minute here to say a very heartfelt, very sincere thank you to Jessica Flynn, Sean Mann, Natalie, no last name, Daniel Telford, David Clement, Alalia, I'm going to have to ask that person how to pronounce their name. This is the second time that I've said it. Alalia is how I'm going to choose to pronounce it right now, but I'm going to have to ask them. Kelts, no last name. Lisa Malcolm, King Taylor Project. Scott, no last name. Jason Shellen, Kyle Elise Tim, Greg Crew, Julian Mike Archer, Ali Fun Times, Lori Obi, Carrie, aka Kiba 13, we love you. Samuel Johnson, Mateo, Caitlin Hescock, Helen Morton, Michael Tam, Matthew Fouts, Smurf McGurf, Julie, Paula Howbridge, Carla Macias, Ken McLaughlin, Wrongtown, Prophylactics, Amanda. It sounds like I'm just like, just Prophylactics in general. There's actually a person named Prophylactics. We love him. Amanda, no last name, Elizabeth Gardner-Wellman, Patty Lynn, Megan Moore, Sarah Smart, Nicole Beer, Chris, no last name, Valerie Sanfilippo, Lee A. Kelsey, Unspoiled, with an exclamation mark, Allison, etc., Claire Walker, Samantha Scheller, Aaron Miera, Desiree Primavera, I wonder if that's a real last name, Primavera, Jody Santillan, Tom Robertson, David Bernardi, Kelly Riley, Jeremy, no last name, Exis 007 is just a screen name, I assume, Margaret Woodrich, Mei Chung, I'll have to ask Mei Chung, how to pronounce that name as well, I'll ask, Marley Sage Gable, Betsy Malicetti, Podcast Enjoyer, I like that name for the Patreon supporter. And lastly, but not leastly, our most recent patron, Travis Stein. Thank you all so much for being a part of our production team. We love you so much, and we really couldn't make this happen without you. Like, you are making it possible for this to be a world in which I create content professionally. So thank you. If you are out there listening to the show, and you are a consumer of my content on TikTok or Instagram or just this podcast or all of the above, and you would like to become a supporter of that and you have the means to, head on over to patreon.com/AustinArcher and join our lovely little family. Okay, here's the show. I imagine one of the most significant evolutionary changes that arrived from the development of the prefrontal cortex in early hominids was the ability to ask the question, why? Why am I here? Why am I aware I am here in this precarious way? Why am I not simply going about my natural functions like other animals, seeking out food and shelter and avoiding predators? I mean, I do those things, but why do I also spend so much time thinking about things that have nothing to do with those basic tenets of survival? Why do I look up at the night sky and desire to extract meaning from the twinkling void? Why do I feel such attachment to the other beings around me? At times, such sorrow, such overwhelming joy, such loneliness, such connection? Why am I able to ask the question why, and why do I care to know the answer? Now, couple our newfound inquisitive nature with our ability to mythologize and tell stories, and you have the birth of the idea of God or gods. So what is God, then? As a concept? As an entity? Is it simply a story we created to satiate our insatiable need to answer unanswerable questions? Or is it something deeper? Is it the reason those questions exist in the first place? The energy signature that gives rise to consciousness itself? Is it something fundamental to existence? And can it even be adequately described in language, or is it an idea so intrinsically woven into the fabric of everything that is, ever has been, or ever will be, that attempting to define it in finite terms is an exercise in futility? If you're expecting me to offer answers to any of these grand, heady questions, I'm obviously not going to. I just have the same upright brain that our early ancestors did, so I still enjoy pondering the potential explanations behind these questions, knowing there is no way of ever truly, definitively answering them. I'm also a person who has held many different conceptions of God in my short lifetime, so I'm endlessly fascinated by the concept. At one point in my life, God was a loving father figure. I was his child, and I had an entire story of my life with him before I came to Earth, and the potential of the life I could live with him after I die. For many years after that, my conception of God became much more cynical. I saw the idea of God as little more than a fairy tale, a story passed down through eons of various civilizations, reconceptualized and typically abused as a means of controlling mass populations and retaining a given power structure. More recently, the concept of God has taken a new form in my life. I now view it as a more amorphous kind of pervasive universal energy, as the essence of truth and being that resides in every person and indeed in everything. The source energy that courses through the pulsating process of the entire universe. You know, all that stuff. My guest today is another person who was confident she knew what and who God was. She was confident that the people in her life who were teaching her about the mind and the will of God were telling her immutable, rock-solid facts that she could safely rely on and trust. This faith dictated the way she lived her entire life, the way she made decisions. It was the framework through which she experienced her consciousness. And then 2 years ago, that immutable, all-consuming conception dissolved and had to be reconceived. It's a common enough story, and one that I somehow haven't talked about yet on this podcast. So let's do that. From a Blanketfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my new friend Carly Bingham about reconceptualizing God.
Yeah, it is fascinating to me because so much, especially if it's like a high demand religion like the LDS Church, or I've also had hundreds of DMs from Jehovah's Witnesses, like former Jehovah's Witnesses, that say they relate to a lot of my content, and, you know, former evangelical Christians. And so much of your identity is rooted in these beliefs that you have and that you've been taught for your whole life. And so when someone kind of goes like against what you think is true, you're like, oh, you are attacking me. Like you are, you don't like me in person. And it's like, no, I just disagree. And we could probably talk all day long about people's definition of truth and how they see truth and how they define belief and all that. That gets really complicated. But for me, I think, look, I don't care what you believe. I don't care how you practice your religion. I don't care what you do, but we need to reduce the harm on people as a whole.
Yeah.
And that's my thing. And a lot of the times we don't realize that we are harming people with our beliefs. I certainly did not see it when I was in it.
Believe whatever you want and 100% practice whatever you want, whatever helps you get through this life, whatever helps you, you know, find some peace and feel like maybe it inspires you to be of service and to be a better person and be a better neighbor. Do whatever you need to do. Call it whatever you want, but don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
We need you to be nice still. And we need you to make sure that you're not utilizing your beliefs to bludgeon other people over the head and hurt other people and take away rights from other people. And
Yeah, it's very complicated because people think that they are doing things out of love. They think that they are, you know, they have these practices or they're voting certain ways because, like, this is what God wants me to do. And I have the truth and I'm on God's team. And so it's just so you can't make them see it another way. That's also another weird topic, like how much of our beliefs are actually a choice and what goes into that. But
yeah, the choice thing, the whole, I love when Mormon people are like, my daughter Madison has made the choice to get baptized. I'm like, oh, did she now? Did she make that choice? Was that something that you came and sat her down and you were like, hey, sweetheart, just so you know, it's totally okay if you're like, I actually don't believe in God. Like, we're cool with that. Like, you just say that. Let us know. You don't have to do this. It's chill one way or another. No. If you want to stay home and watch cartoons on Sunday, that's totally
cool. That's totes cool. Yeah.
That's cool.
I have had a few followers who are still practicing. It'll be like, yes, I've actually talked to my 8-year-old about this and they don't want to be baptized. And I have held back and we're like, okay, you don't have to, which is awesome. I think that's so great. I know I did not feel that way. And I know that my 15-year-old daughter told me, she was like, I didn't have a choice. She's like, I didn't have a choice whether I wanted to be baptized or not. I just didn't want to disappoint everybody. And I was like, that's,
I know. And look, I know that I wanted to be baptized as a kid. Yeah. I know that, like, I was excited about being baptized.
I mean, it's a day all about you.
Right. But even then, it's still like, I don't know what that means. I don't actually know a life outside of my Mormon neighborhood that I was raised in. Like, I don't know what the other options are. So to me, being baptized is just a rite of passage that everyone does, that my siblings did, that my cousins all did, that my neighbors were all doing, that as a kid you're growing up and getting to see these kids get invited up to the pulpit at church and they get handed a Book of Mormon by the bishop and it's really cool and the whole ward is really proud of you. I'm not aware that there are other options outside of that. So while I can still say, yeah, I was excited about being baptized. Yeah. I didn't feel coerced. I didn't really know what coercion was. I didn't really know, you know, so it's not about, even if you went and asked your kid, are you sure that this is what you want? And they say, yes. Okay, I guess they're making a decision. It's about, can an 8-year-old who's only been exposed to one way of thinking really make an informed decision for themselves?
Informed, right. Yeah. And I don't know if that is possible. And then you could go back and forth about what, like, cultural practices are and how, like, oh, it's just like a cultural thing, and that's all well and good. But what's interesting is that I have 4 kids, and I have a 9-year-old he's the first in our family not to be baptized. And just the other day he said, Mom, do I need to be baptized? I mean, we haven't been to church in almost 2 years. And but all of his friends, most of his friends are, you know, come from practicing LDS families. And I was like, oh, tell me why you think that, buddy. Like, do you think you need to be baptized? And he goes, well, shouldn't I? And I said, oh, I don't know. Do you think you need to be? And he said, well, yeah, I need to wash all my sins away. And I said, well, don't think you have any sins, bud, but is this something that you really want? And he goes, I think so. And I was like, well, we probably should start going back to church though, because if you're going to make this big commitment, we need to start attending church again every Sunday, because this is what you're committing to. And he goes, maybe I don't want to be baptized. I said, okay. It's like, you can choose to be baptized later on if you want, but like it, when you're older and you recognize what a big commitment and choice this is, right now I'm not so sure if this is something that you really want. And so, you know, trying to like not be one hard line one way or another.
Yeah, but trying to respect the kids' agency and stuff, but also understanding as the adult in the situation, like, where are you getting this from?
Yes.
Who at school said that, who's been treating you different since you know, like, or do you feel weird because everyone in the family is baptized and you're not?
Yeah.
And you know, where, you know, but so tell me about this a little bit. You said 2 years. Is this a fairly recent thing for you and your family?
Yeah, so grew up super devout LDS family. I'm one of 11 kids. We grew up in Southern California. Wow. Yeah, I mean, Mormons are gonna Mormon, right?
Uh-huh.
So very devout family, very strict. My dad was a bishop when I was in high school. Very, very orthodox, did all the things, went to seminary at freaking 5 a.m. every morning in high school because it wasn't release time in California, anywhere else outside of Utah. So married in the temple and moved to Utah about 7 years ago with my husband and our four kids. And like 2019, my husband kind of came to me and was like, I've got some concerns about a couple things. And of course, at the time I was like, oh no. Like, our family's going to be destroyed. And, you know, thinking all of these things that you are kind of indoctrinated with, that if you question or if you doubt or if you have these concerns, then something's wrong with the person.
Even just having the questions.
Yes, even just the question.
Yeah.
And so, but my husband and I have an extremely good relationship. We are really good friends. He is an incredible person. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to trust him. Like, that didn't mean I didn't come back with some snarky comments here and there, or I kind of expressed my concern about our family, because I did. But after he kind of told me a couple things, and he's like, I just need to take a step back. And I was like, okay. And I just listened, and I was understanding, but definitely very worried. And but also, he knows me very well, that where if he was like, look, you need to read all this, or you need to learn all this, I would have been like, well, no, I'm not going to do any of that, because I don't do things if people push too hard for me to do them. So he just kind of left it up to me. And then I just started to read a lot of things and really started to dive into a lot of research and like, oh, I've had a lot of questions, or this doesn't make sense. And tons of podcasts. There's so many podcasts out there. And so it just kind of like, you know, you go, for a lot of people, they go down this rabbit hole, and a lot don't come out on the other side still believing in it. And that happened to us, and that kind of rocked my world, to say the least.
Of course it would. Yeah. I mean, it's a familiar story. I know the story well, and I've talked to many people who have had the same story. I've heard that phrase of, I need to take a step back.
Yeah,
I said that when I about 15 years ago, and just kept taking steps back and back and back and back. You just keep pulling that thread. And I had an episode of this podcast a while back called How to Know If You're in a Cult, and I was more addressing the Trump supporters than anyone else. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of crossover there while I'm talking about these descriptors where I'm like, yes. Well, there's a lot of crossover here with Mormonism.
a little bit.
And one of them was like, if the group that you belong to says that the only place you can go for empirical truth is them, and that you shouldn't look elsewhere for answers or to your questions, and that other people are, everyone else is lying, everyone, you know, I'm like, that's not a good sign, because
red flag.
It really means that the group that you're a part of fears what you might deduce under your own volition if you are allowed to read other literature, explore other philosophies. And the fact that, like, Mormons are very explicitly told, like, what books they should and shouldn't read, and what people they should and shouldn't listen to, and which movies they should and should not attend. And it's like, boy, if your testimony of this thing is so ironclad, if you're so certain that this is the one immutable exact truth of the universe, it shouldn't be threatened by exploration of outside philosophy and trying to gather more information. It shouldn't be threatened by more information. It should be sustained by more information, if anything. The more research and effort I put into understanding this thing intellectually, the more it should come to light as an even truer thing, instead of, oops, the more I just start poking holes in this thing even the slightest bit and it crumbles. It just shatters.
When you grow up, and it also depends on family dynamics, how strict or how orthodox your own family is, and that plays a lot into it. But it's still, as a whole, the system as a whole discourages critical thought. And there's a lot of members will be like, well, no, it doesn't. But it does, especially if, like, the prophet gets up and was like, doubt your doubts, you know, or, you know, don't choose to believe. Like, that was one of the things that was said, I guess, in this last general conference. It would be like, if you are struggling, choose to believe. I'm like, that is not a thing. Like, you don't just choose. I can't just choose to believe in Santa Claus.
So this is what's interesting, is like a little bit of like what I wanted to talk to you about today is, like, you know, you and I are very similar stories, just a little bit different points down the road. You know, I left about 15 years ago. And so it's been all of the process of the early days and the pain and the distance from family and friends has had time to sort of calcify and heal and become something different. And I even have this newfound relationship with some kind of higher energy that I feel like never really left me, but I've just sort of redefined the way that I think about it and what I've and the way that it's always been in my life, this sort of God energy. But I've had people say in AA stuff similar to that, where they're like, if you don't believe in God, or if you don't believe in higher power, you can borrow my faith. Like, they'll say stuff like, do you believe that I believe? And I'll be like, sure, I believe that you believe. And they're like, cool, that's good enough. Like, you can trust that the fact that I rely on this thing has helped me stay sober. And if you trust that, then you just do what I am saying I did, and I bet you'll be okay. And so, and a lot of people start that way. It's so many people come into AA as atheists because they have really negative experience with organized religion. And the last thing they want to do is go to some place that's like, you got to pray if you want to get sober. Yeah. And it's like, oh, fuck that. Like, no way. And really what it was for me was, for a lot of people, is we realize it's a misconception of what they're talking about when they say that. They're not talking about pray to Yahweh or to, you know, Judeo-Christian God. They're not talking about pray to Jesus. They're not talking about help me, Joseph Smith. They're not talking about L. Ron Hubbard. They're talking about, and it's very clear in the literature, this God of your own understanding. So if you come in and you're a Christian or a Buddhist or a Jewish person or a Muslim, they're saying whatever your conception of this thing is, that's what we want you to try to find a relationship with, which to me is the actual way that I want church to work. Is like,
I love that. Yeah.
There is something that people are talking about when they talk about God. And that's the reason why religion exists. It's the reason why so many people feel so strongly about the religion that they're in, because despite the fact that they can poke holes in the Joseph Smith story or poke holes in church history or point out the ways that the church was horribly racist or misogynistic or continues to be racist and misogynistic or homophobic and all of these problems with the church, there's something that they feel when they go and participate in this communal experience, and when they're of service to their neighbors, there's something that they feel like they're tapping into. And I wonder if at 2 years removed, if you've got new language for that, or if you're sort of just in a state of sort of like agnosticism or atheism, or if like what your relationship to that is right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, and that is sort of kind of the purpose of what I talk about on Instagram, is just this deconstructing of kind of everything about you and what you used to believe, and kind of rebuilding or not rebuilding. And as someone who used to believe in this like anthropomorphic white dude with a beard, and you know, here's his son Jesus, who is also a man and has a beard, and like the Holy Ghost, who is maybe be a man or maybe is a man, I don't know. But
I always see him like in a white sheet, like a ghost with eye holes cut out, and he's like floating around, like ooh,
like lots of male energy. That's the thing about it. Lots of male energy. There's no women in Mormon theology. So
Heavenly Mother is too sacred for us.
That's too sacred. Heavenly Mother is like the fringe thing right now. It's like what the progressive members talk about. And I'm like, guys, it's all kind of the same. Like, people are just believing in their own concept, right?
Yes.
And again, my thing is never to take away someone's like comfort in their concept of what God is. If that helps you get, like we said before, if that helps you get through the day, by all means, like, do what you need to do, you know, try not to hurt anybody. I don't care either way.
Right.
But especially with that reel going viral and getting hundreds of DMs from evangelical Christians, Muslims, Mormons, Catholics, I mean, any like denomination or religion you can think of, even people who don't go to church, but all you need to do is have a relationship with Jesus. That's it. That's all you need. And I'm like, that's great. But also what does that mean exactly? I mean, people's concept of who Jesus is, I mean, varies wildly. Like,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just, Republicans have their own idea of what Jesus is, and then progressive liberals have their own ideas of what Jesus is or what Jesus taught. It's just very interesting.
Yeah, liberals have this crazy idea that Jesus was like, help the poor, and like, you know, being rich people can't get into heaven because rich people are really self-centered, and like, you need to rebuke your riches and just be of service. Like, liberals are crazy, and Republicans know the truth, which is the richest person is the best person, and poor people are going to hell. And
and lots of guns. I mean,
lots of guns. That's it. Yeah.
So, yeah. And again, I'm not someone who like wants to put people in a box depending on what they do or don't believe. I try not to do that, especially coming out of religion, that when I used to do that all the time. So, but as far as God goes, especially when I'm getting all these messages, I'm thinking, wow, so everyone thinks they have the truth.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
have their own ideas of what truth is. And nobody fucking knows. Like, nobody knows.
You know what I think is interesting? You know how Mormonism always said, we believe that everyone has parts of truth, but we have the fullness of truth? It's, and most religions are like this. What's so interesting is they're like so close to being right there by saying that, by saying everyone has a part of the truth, but not the fullness. The what makes them wrong is that they go, but we've actually got it, which is what every religion will say. Every religion's willing to be like, hey, you know, lots of people have like good things. Those evangelicals, they say some good things. Buddhists say some good things, but it's actually us Jehovah's Witnesses that have the actual thing. And it's like, that's what makes you wrong, is this idea that you and only you are correct, and that you have a monopoly on the absolute definition of what God is and how God's mind works. And
And the arrogance.
Yeah.
The hubris is mind-blowing when you really think about it. So you're telling me you know and understand how the entire universe works. You know what happens after you die. You know what happened before you were born. You understand everything about all of this that, like, people have been trying to figure out for thousands of, like, since, you know, humans were conscious. Like, you know the answers to all this.
And you're confident enough that you will speak for God, that you will like regularly say, no, this is what God wants from you. This is what God wants from you and me. And this is what, trust me, I know. No, I have a relationship with him,
yes,
with capital H him. I have a relationship with this man with this flowy beard and these robes. I know him. And this is what he wants. Evangelicals love saying, they'll be like, I was on the plane and I was coming to see you and God came into my heart and told me. You're like, what are you talking about? But the confidence that these people genuinely feel like they have an intimate personal link. And again, here's the trippy part of it. And this is why I think this is an interesting topic, especially to talk with someone who is in like the early stages of, like, because Mormonism is a hard God trip. And to come out of that, it's like unplugging from a simulation. It's really weird. The world is totally different. And all of a sudden everything means something the opposite of what it meant yesterday. But what's still so interesting about all this stuff and what's really trippy is when these people talk about this, about having a personal connection to God, there's a part of me now, today, who's like, well, again, you're not wrong. Because this thing that you feel, this voice that's in your heart that you feel that tells you to be of service, or that tells you that you should love people, and that you, like, this thing that you feel that you know is something I think every single person alive has. Mm-hmm. And it's a human thing. It's a function of the universe. To me, this is my new agey Eckhart Tolle.
Tell me your new agey.
Yeah, is like, and I honestly think, like, again, and this is without me saying specifics, because I can't define it specifically. It sort of exists outside of linguistic terms, but the universe it exists. Everything that is in the universe is the universe. Every Pluto is the universe. The moons around Jupiter are the universe. Everything is the universe. So you and I are the universe because we are objects in the universe. Everything is being dictated by this universal energy that is pulsating through all of these objects and making them move, and sentience is sort of like these creatures that get to be sentient are sort of the universe reflecting on itself, because we are the universe, but we have the ability to observe my hands and my space. So God, to me, is just this initial source energy that gives being to the universe. And that's about as clear as I can get with it, and that's still insanely abstract. You know, but it's like, it can't be any clearer than that, because any clearer than that, anytime I try to give God specific anthropomorphized characteristics or say, this is God's name, or this is where God lives, or these are the specific words of God. This is the word of God. I've lost the thread.
Yes.
I'm off the map. I'm now trying to be God. I'm now, you know.
Yeah. And that is what I love, all of that. I feel like I should have taken an edible before I listened to all that. Oh my God, bro. Yes, dude. But yeah, it is. I don't know if you've heard of the podcast, You Are Not So Smart, but
no,
you would love it. It is. He has like experts that come on and talk about like neuroscience and physics and, you know, just really trippy things that will seriously freak you out. And I love that kind of stuff. And he just had someone come on talking about like the nature of reality and how people like perceive reality and where did that come from? And does everybody see it the same way? And which I find so incredibly fascinating. And this neuroscientist who like, this is what he studies for a living. He's like, yeah, not everybody sees all the same colors. Like we have tested that and proved that. And then we also have animals and other species that see colors that humans can't. And so every kind of species and like human or like living thing sees different parts of reality. And so together we're all kind of sharing reality. I'm like, I don't, like, this is making my brain hurt. So for me to come in and be like, oh yeah, I have the truth, or I know how all this works. I'm like, I'm not about that anymore. So I am just wanting to soak in all the information that I can. And I'm not saying there is no God. I'm not saying I know God or what God is, or I can, you know, people use God in so many different ways, the term, I mean, define it in different ways. And yeah, that feeling of like, oh, I want to do good. I want to be good. Like, where does that come from? Why do we want that? Like, why do we need like this connection to other humans and our community? Like, why is that so important to like our survival, right? And which I think is really cool to think about. But yeah, I just don't define it in any kind of, right now using the word God is like super, not super triggering, but like it triggers me a little bit just because of how I used to see God.
No, absolutely. I relate to that 100%. It took me a couple years in the program before I could like call it God. And I still don't really like calling it God. Like I call it like higher self. I love the term source energy. I'm like super into that. I'm like, source energy. Like the energy that caused the Big Bang, like the source.
You know,
like source energy. I love that. But yeah, there is a lot of like trauma around the word God for a lot of former faithful, for people who are part of a very, very ingrained culture, some kind of faith culture. There's a lot of issues with the word God, and I totally relate to that. Do you have like a thing that you would call yourself right now? Like would you identify as an atheist or an agnostic, or are you like not really at the place where you feel like a label is useful?
I'm sure you've come across Abraham Piper on TikTok. Do you follow him?
No.
Oh my God, you have to. He's so awesome. He's the son of like a super famous evangelical pastor.
Oh, and I love it.
Yeah, and I love how his brain works. Like he just has the most entertaining, not as entertaining as yours, Austin, but you know, very just insightful, thought-provoking content. And I just really like how he puts it out there. And he kind of deconstructed from evangelicalism and said, you know, when I came out of, you know, believing in Jesus or whatever, I kind of felt like, do I have to be an atheist now? Do I need to be, you know, and then he started naming all these other philosophers and then he goes, you know what? I'm just nothing. I am nothing. I'm fine with being nothing and it's okay to be nothing. And I really liked that. And because I think when you put this label on yourself, especially if you are public in any way, it'd be like, okay, I'm an agnostic atheist now. People are like, dismiss her opinion. Don't want to listen to her. Means nothing to me. Because we put these labels on people, you know, in order to like, okay, I need to fit this person in this file and this person in this file and listen to them according to how I perceive them. And not listen to them if I disagree with them in some way, which, you know, everybody does it. But so I don't know if I would label myself in some way. I guess I would say I don't currently maintain a belief in any of like the thousands of gods that are out there right now.
Yeah.
Like
the man-made stories of God, the God myths, the God tales, the thousands that exist that have been told, Zeus, all of these things, you don't think that any of them are literal people that,
right?
Because what's funny about that too, is it's like, it's such an easy, again, critical thinking. It's such an easy proposition to accept because it's like, What's more likely, that one of them is right of all of these stories that have been told? Because there can only be one. There can only be one. Mm-hmm. So, like, and one is correct, and you happen to find the right one. You happen to land on the right one of all the thousands that have existed and all of the massive organizations of millions of people who have followed devoutly these different organizations. You happen to find the one singular, or just that they're all different iterations of this, like different mutations of the same general idea, which is people trying to understand the experience of consciousness, like, and how bizarre it can be.
Yes, and that's kind of where I feel like I'm at right now. I'm like, either it's all true or none of it is true. I just don't understand how just one can be right. Like, oh, nope, this guy, you know, Joseph Smith went into the woods and he saw God and now he's right. Like, all of his followers are right. And then everyone else is wrong. And it doesn't make any sense when you, like, you know, zoom out and see the bigger picture of, like, wow, this is crazy what we are doing. And it's crazy that we're here. It's crazy that we're conscious and we're all trying to figure it out what this means. And to say that one person understands it, I mean, even the most well-respected scholars and scientists are willing to say, you know, I don't have all the answers and I'm willing to be wrong and I'm willing to entertain that I am not right about this. And here, come disprove my theory. Here, come, you know, look at my content and review it. I mean, even the smartest people in the world are willing to entertain that they are wrong. And
isn't it freeing when you leave Mormonism to be like, I don't know?
Yes, it is so freeing. At first, it scares the shit out of you.
Yeah.
It really does. It terrified me in the beginning. I went through, like, a pretty acute existential crisis. I was like, oh my God, like, what happens when I die? I used to have all these answers. And you mean people just think that you die and then there's nothing? Like, how can that be? I mean, it is the wildest concept to kind of reframe all of your thoughts and what you thought you knew about the world. And it is scary as fuck, but it's also incredibly liberating.
Yeah, I mean, you go from knowing everything, literally knowing everything that could possibly matter, anything that's possibly valuable information, any information that actually matters, you know it. You know it in your being. With every fiber of your being, you know the most important information that there could possibly be to know. And then in a matter of weeks, the only thing that you really know is that, like, you love your family and
that's
kind of it.
You that, like, really is it. That's
you still
so
like
true.
Your favorite movies and you still like your favorite band.
And, that's about it. I was like, what is it that I am, you know, we talk about like certainty, like I'm so certain that this is right and this is true. And then, you come back with like, wow, I am like 0% sure of any of this. And yes, that's so scary, but oh man, is it so beautiful. And opens up your entire world to all of these things that you previously had to kind of shut out in your brain because the cognitive dissonance is so intense. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to shut out a lot of what doesn't make sense in the world in order to kind of make it fit, you know? You have to make it fit somehow.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. Just going back a little bit to, you know, what you were saying about titles too, about like atheist, agnostic, all this stuff, like that you're like, well, I don't want to, we like to label people, put people in boxes, put people in files. And I found, you know, I spent a lot of years as like a very, like, I'm an atheist. And I thought it was important to identify as an atheist because atheists seem to be kind of marginalized in society in this weird way where, like, we don't have any atheist politicians. We don't have, like people are like, I got to make sure that whoever I'm voting for at least believes in God. And it's like, why? Why is that a prerequisite for in the 21st century that you need to make sure that they believe in God before you can vote for them? So I thought it was important to make to identify as an atheist. I still identify as an atheist in many ways because I relate to what you just said, which is I don't believe in any of the God stories. I don't believe in any of them as literal truth. I believe in them as humanity expressing this same idea in different forms over and over again. And that makes me think there's something to that. But I don't believe in any of them as a literal truth. So I'm an atheist in that regard. And and what I found through 10 plus years of being an atheist is that atheists are a very diverse group of thinkers.
Very.
There are hardline atheists who... Everything that you and I have talked about where does love come from? Where does the desire to do service and be kind come from? They would just say that's evolutionary. It's a survival mechanism that's hardwired into your brain because you need to care about your community, because the more that we care about each other, the higher our survival rate is if we're taking care, you know, which makes perfect sense. It absolutely works out and everything like that. I think that people... Eckhart Tolle talks about the thinking self versus the knowing self. Mm-hmm. And the thinking self to me is the side of the part of me that aligns with those kinds of atheists. That's like, everything has a rational explanation and I can figure it all out. It's my mind problem solving and figuring things out. My knowing self is the part of me that when someone says we are all one and we are all part of the same giant thing, there's the knowing self is like, that's somehow true. Uh-huh. I can't explain it and I don't need to, and I don't need to figure it. That's another big difference of outside of religion, faith and belief is like, I'm not required to come up with the story. I don't need to come up with the explanation. I don't need to explain to someone how I know that that's true. There is a part of me. And I think there's a part of a lot of people that when they hear that, when someone goes like, you and I are not separated, actually, we are in the same like stream of energy currently, and we are connected by that. The same that like two waves in the ocean aren't actually separate. They're part of the ocean. They might look like two separate things, but they are
connected.
You know, I'm like, I hear that stuff and I'm just like, I recognize it as truth and I don't need to give it any other explanation outside of that. And that's why I'm like, these religious people, I'm like, you're not all the way wrong. Like,
and again, it's where that hubris comes in, is that I don't want to participate in that anymore. It's the fundamentalist mindset where that is also something that you have to deconstruct when you leave like a fundamentalist religion, because a lot of people when they come out of religion be like, well, all religions are wrong now and all religion is bad and everybody who's religious is terrible or believes in God. That's still like a fundamentalist mindset, and that's something that I don't want to engage in anymore, which is really hard to not do. I mean, whether you're talking about politics or I mean just anything, is that only this group has it right and this group has it wrong and everyone else is wrong. And yes, there's like, we have to go back to like, okay, harming people and what harm is, and we need to be careful about like not hurting people and push back on that when systems are harming people. As far as me saying like, guys, I'm super smart now that I no longer believe in religion because I have it all figured out. No, I don't. I don't know shit. I'm just doing my thing. And if I don't want to come across as if like I'm so enlightened, you know, look at me, I'm so enlightened. No, I am not. I'm just so excited to just really try to be in this world, in this universe, be myself. And just I don't know. It's so hard to explain. Like, I don't have to have any answers. I just want to learn. I just want to learn. I want to engage, you know, as respectfully and then kindly as I can in this world, and just kind of leave my mark as that. And so I don't feel like there's like some purpose that I need to have or do. And everyone's just kind of doing their thing. And I don't know, it's confusing, but also really, I don't know, kind of amazing.
It's a very exciting place that you're in. I remember it. I remember that feeling of being like, I like everything you're saying. I'm just like, yes. Like the feeling of being like, I'm going to just learn stuff now. Cause people are, yes. I remember people asking me like, well, what are you going to do? Who are you now? What are you going to do? And I was like, I'm going to learn whatever I want to learn about. I'm going to read whatever I want to read. I'm going to listen to whoever I want to listen to. I'm not going to feel shame about exploring my sexuality. I'm not going to feel shame about things that I don't think I should feel shame about. I'm going to try a bunch of drugs and, little did I know, become addicted and have to become sober. But hey, that's my prerogative and my route through life. I wish I could tell you that the fun part is that eventually you learn everything and then you're really smart. But no, what you find out is the more you learn, the more you know you don't know shit.
And, no, exactly.
And it just gets so fun. You're like, oh, we really don't know.
Yeah. And that's where I kind of get, that's the part in this journey. I love saying journey. It's like become like this catchphrase for a lot of people now. It's like, this is my journey, guys. But kind of the part that trips me up and angers me a little bit is when people try to come in and tell me what they know and what they know is true and this is how I need to live and that I am wrong for doing what I'm doing. No, again, believe what you want to believe. Don't come in and tell me that I'm wrong. Don't come and tell me how to live my life or tell me that you know better for me, because you don't. I'm not going to do that for you. I'm not going to come into your DMs and, you know, bear my untestimony to you and say, Jesus doesn't love you. Like, I have so many DMs saying, Jesus loves you and repent and come back to Jesus. And it's, the Bible is true and the Bible is real. I'm like, chill, guys, just chill. It's okay.
People who literally don't know what the Bible says and like have never actually read it and have only ever heard that their pastor sort of like giving his take on certain verses, certain cherry picked verses on certain topics, and they're so confident. It's crazy. You know what's
very confident.
You know what's really interesting to me too is you talked about this earlier about like the problem, the reason why you get that response from people. Is because whether they know it or not, they unconsciously identify themselves with their beliefs. So they don't separate their identity from this thing that they believe. So when you attack the belief or when you try to deconstruct the belief, they feel personally attacked by that, whether they know that's what's happening or not. But then what's so interesting is these same people will, when it comes to things like the easy one is their stance on people being gay, that they're just like they believe that it's a sin. But a lot of these people will be like, hey, look, I have a gay cousin. My best friend is gay. I love all of the gay people in my life. They're my and they'll be like, I went to Pride last year, but I believe that God, that's not part of God's plan. And they like separate themselves from that belief. They will be like, that's not me. That belief is something that I'm unfortunately tied to. It's just part of this overall belief set that I accept. But like me in my personal life, oh, I got tons of gay friends. I'm really nice to gay people. It's just, and it's like, oh, convenient that you can separate that out from your identity. Yes. That you're like, but that's not me. It's like, no, that's you.
It's the cognitive dissonance rearing its ugly head because they don't want it to be part of their identity, but they feel as if they have no choice when you go on a deeper level. It's when these people message me and saying, I don't believe that you're going to hell. It's what the book says. It's what God believes. I'm just the messenger. Like, I had so many people say this to me. And I said, and then they will say, it just makes me so sad to see you fall into this. And I was like, I think you should explore that on really why that makes you so sad.
Yes, play that out.
Yes, explore that on a deeper level.
If it bothers you that I'm going to spend eternity in hell because you're a compassionate person who doesn't want to see a good person who just happened to believe the wrong things and that they're doomed to an eternity in hell. If that bothers you, if you're capable of being like sort of ethically and morally bothered by that, how is it possible that the all-knowing, omnipresent, omni-loving, benevolent ruler of the universe doesn't have a fraction of your empathy and compassion.
So I have said to people, I said, I think you should take that and take it to therapy and really explore that sadness on a deeper level and really dig in deeper to why that makes you so sad and why you want to believe something so, so incredibly awful. And again, it's easier for me to kind of separate that, like, okay, these people are just talking to a mirror because they have no idea who I am. They're just rolling into my DMs and telling me these things. They couldn't care less if I believe in God or not, their version of God. They really, truly don't care. I mean, they will say that they do. Oh, yes, I love you. We love everybody. Because I love you, I need to tell you this. And then they will say, it's not me, it's God. And I was like, you need to take that up with your God, because that sounds like a pretty narcissistic, abusive relationship you got going on there. And I want no part of it. So
listen, if it were up to me, you would be totally chill. Trust me. Like, I think you're awesome, girlfriend. But God is, it's not me. I mean, like, his word's not mine. You're like, what? Listen to what you're saying right now. You're saying that you don't, like, condone this thing that God has said, but unfortunately them's the rules. Like,
yes. And especially becoming a parent and having four kids, I have 15-year-old, 13-year-old, 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And when I see how God operates in the minds of some of these people, and if I parented in the way that their God parents, people would be calling child services on me. And for me to say, look, like, let's say my husband was abusive, and I said to my kids, look, this is just how our family is. This is just how your dad is. And it's your fault, right? It's your fault that dad is the way that he is. Like,
you know,
this is why people are in therapy.
Listen, if it was up to me, you wouldn't get beat every time that you forgot to tighten the lid on the jelly jar. But you know, dad, not God, has those rules written out on the fridge. And you know that those are the rules. And I didn't write the rules, but it really is exactly like that. It's like, hey, if it was up to me, if I could write the rules, I would say that it's okay to forget things every once in a while and not get the shit kicked out of you. But they're dad's rules, and he loves you, and it's your fault for breaking the rules. So you know the rules.
Don't break the rules, honey, sweetie. And yeah, that's a shitty relationship. I mean, that is not one I want to participate in. And that's why everyone that believes in that type of God needs to go to therapy and kind of really reframe their thinking and realize that they love this authoritarian, I always get authoritarian and authoritative mixed up, disciplinary and abusive God. And I was like, why do you want that in your life? I mean, that is,
well, so
that's awful.
That's what happens when we try to give these clearly defined stories of who and what God is, I think. Anytime humans try to, like, give very clear mythology, but, like, really make it, like, no, this is literally, we bungle it all up because we mix in our prejudices and we mix in our fears and our insecurities and all of our stuff, and we put that in there.
All of our trauma and baggage.
Yeah, and it gets all mixed up in there, and it's like, this is the problem with when we try to come up with this clearly defined narrative of who or what God is, instead of just allowing God to just be. That it's just this thing that it's like, we can just sort of look at each other and go like, you know what I'm talking about, and go like, yeah, more or less, and then like, and you know what I'm talking, yeah, more or less, like,
yeah, okay,
you understand, like, that thing that's inside of you, like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, like, I don't really know what it is, but like, I understand what you're talking about, and that's why I love the AA conception of God, because it's always just like a higher power of your understanding, like, so, and meaning literally, like, the thing that you understand it to be, that's sufficient. That's what it is, and we're not going to go into any further detail on it than that. Because if we try to, if I start trying to tell you what your God has to be, I know I'm going to fuck it up. I'm going to at some point slip something in there that you're going to, I'm going to be like, also, like, you, God, the weird rules that people come up with where it's just you can't do this on a Wednesday. Like, why? I don't know.
That's what my God says. Yes, that is where it gets really tricky, is when people try to take their concept of God and like put it into law, like make it legislation or make rules or anything kind of based around how other people need to live their conception of God. That's where I'm like, put on the brakes. Let's talk about this. Let's come to like a greater understanding of where these beliefs are coming from and what you are trying to gain from this.
The fact that it never occurs to these people, the people who try to push for legislation based on their belief in their version of God, the fact that it never occurs to them, like ever, that modern medicine is a result of God's will or something, that like it never occurs to them that it's like, hey, is it ever, do you know that babies used to just be thrown in the street because people couldn't take care of them, so they would just be like, well, I don't have enough money to feed this baby, so I'm gonna like give it milk until I run out, and then I'm gonna just, it's gonna die, and I'm just gonna sort of discard my toddler in the mud. And so we just had like women doing back alley abortions, and just because like they just didn't have the means. So could it possibly be that the evolution of science and medical science is God's will, so that we can actually take care of more babies more healthily and make sure that they're brought into homes that can handle them? And it never occurs to these people that that's a possibility. They're just like, no, you're not supposed to kill.
Nope.
You gotta, you know, who cares about what happens to the kid after it's born, but we just got to make sure.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you do with the baby once it's born. Doesn't matter if this is a detriment to the woman's health and mental health. I mean, there's so many things that play into that. And it doesn't occur to them that maybe this progressive person who also believes in God, many progressive liberals like believe in God and they have their own interpretations of God. And it doesn't occur to many people that like, oh, maybe they're onto something, you know, maybe they have, you know, something to add to this conversation. Maybe their concept of God is can play into this somehow, and we can work together, right? Work together to figure this out. And that's where a lot of us are just, you know, screwing it all up, just trying to win at any cost. And I think that's, I don't know. It's a lot and it's confusing.
It goes back to that abuse of the word that you were talking about, where you were like, I have, the word is triggering, and it's because people abuse it in that way where they're kind of using the word and the concept of God in order to achieve some personal political ends. And there's a lot of just abuse of the concept of God and what God is that makes it for a lot of people just an ugly idea and an ugly word. And that's unfortunate, you know. Anyway, I'm keeping you too long, but this is a conversation that I feel like we've just begun to scratch the surface on. I actually really enjoy this topic and I like talking to you about it. I wonder if you'd be willing to like come back sometime and do another one.
Yeah, for sure. I love this kind of stuff, and this was super fun, and I would love to come back and talk more about this. And yeah. Lots of things and directions we could go, and I think it's awesome.
What are you hoping to do with your social media now that you're a big star on Instagram and you're a rising personality? Are you going to continue making posts about religion and stuff, or do you have any ideas of what you would like to do with your newfound internet
I know, I'm so famous.
Yeah.
I honestly have no idea. I did not have like a goal set out for this when I started. And I want to be like a safe place where people can come and go as they please. If people like unfollow me because they no longer resonate with my content, I'm like, awesome. Please go, be on your merry way. And then people follow me because it's helpful. And I would just want to be helpful in the way that I feel like I can be helpful, which is create this safe place for people who are doubting or questioning, whether that's in Mormonism or any other kind of, you know, fundamental structure with fundamentalism, but take bits and pieces of what they like and, you know, discard the rest. And I don't know what those things are exactly. Some people find some things helpful, some other people don't. But I'm just, I don't know. I'm just out there doing my thing. I don't know, Austin. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I have faith in you, Carly.
So much faith.
I have so much faith. I have faith that you're going to figure it out. That you'll figure out what you want to do, whether that's that you want to continue putting out stuff and making curating that space for people, or maybe after a while you go, I don't want to do this, and that's also an option.
Yeah, it's a lot of emotional labor that I didn't realize that I was doing.
Yes, it is.
It's a lot, and I'm not getting paid for any of this, and but I enjoy it. It's like this hobby for me. But the more the people DM and message me, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of emotional labor. And I'm a person who I'm not super emotional in general. I don't, I can separate myself from other people's feelings and emotions, which I think I've aspired that way. So, but I don't know. It is a lot of work to be engaged with people in my messages and wanting to help them and wanting to like really be thoughtful and like articulate in my messages to them. And I want to continue to be that way, but I'm like, I might have to pick and choose. I don't know. It's a lot, but yeah.
I think you'll figure it out. You'll be all right. Yeah. But it is, you're right. It's a lot. It's when all those people start coming in and they start seeing you as like a person who has a potential platform to push a certain message that they want to push, or you're the kind of person that they're going to go to, and people start trusting you with things. People will come into your DMs and like tell you very personal things, and you're like, oh geez, yeah. Like, I don't know if I have the time to sort of like you came in and like trusted me with this very personal story. And I'm not sure. If I'm doing this for every single person that comes to me, like I sort of have to like be short with people and just be like, thank you for trusting me with that. Like, that sounds very difficult. I wish you the best. And like, I can't really, I can't do much more than that sometimes, because it's like, I'll be here all day. Mm-hmm. If I really.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's exactly it. People are messaging me being like, my husband is going to divorce me if I leave the church. And I'm like, oh honey,
you can't,
like, I am so sorry. Here's some therapy content. You can go see a therapist. I don't know. I'm just so truly sorry, but girl, I don't know. I don't know if I can help you, which is terrible that's even a thing. But man, yeah. I mean, I have teenagers messaging me being like, I don't want to do this. My parents are forcing me. I don't know what to do. I'm like, where's the ethical guidelines here? I'm like, am I supposed to be messaging other teenagers? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, some friendly advice I would say is, do not feel like you have to take that on. And it's very hard, because you're a good person who sees that stuff and feels like you can't not say something, but you really can't. You really, you can't be responsible for the spiritual health of all of those people and making sure that they find their way. You just have to sort of trust that like they're on a path and that they're doing their thing. And, you know, I experience this with like AA all the time, that I meet people who are newcomers and I'll feel like someone will like share with me that they're really struggling. And I'll feel like if I don't say the right combination of words right now, this person's going to go relapse. But it's like, it just can't be on me. It can't be my job.
It can't be your responsibility. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the problem with empathy. You want right. to help everybody.
Right.
You feel, even for the people that you might really disagree with, or that, because you realize it goes so much deeper. Like, okay, this person, they're attacking me, they're coming at me. That's because they're really struggling with something in their own life. And it's not me as a person that they hate. It's just, they're really having a hard time. It's like your TikTok, where it's like, it's that one with the therapist. I love the ones with the therapist. It makes me laugh yeah. so hard, but it's like, it's okay to have empathy for sociopaths. And, well, it makes me laugh. So, not that everyone's a sociopath who disagrees with you, but it's just stuff like that. I'd be like, all right, you have to deal with your own shit. I have shit that I got to deal with, and we're all trying to figure this out. And that's exactly what everyone's trying to do on this planet. And it's kind of a mind fuck in general. So,
yeah. Yep. Geez, there's so many things that I could like continue talking to you about. I'm like, even I want to be like, how fun is it to say fuck whenever you want? Like that's
whatever. I love that word. I love it so much.
Yeah. But cool. We should have you back on and talk about this some more, because it's a topic that, has a lot of juice, and I don't often talk about this on my show, weirdly enough. I don't talk about religion or God very often. I mean, it comes up, but like so far in 75 episodes, I haven't done too much delving into it. So I'm excited to watch how your page continues to progress, and watch your audience continue to grow and evolve, and watch that process take place. People can follow you on Instagram and TikTok, or
I'm not on TikTok. Okay. Uncertainly Carly on Instagram. That's my what Carly. So that's where I am. That's where you can find me.
Awesome. Really, really cool. I'm so happy that you made some time this morning to chat with me. And thank you.
Thank you so much. It was super fun. Love your content. Awesome stuff. Really love it a lot.
Thanks, Carly. I appreciate that. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thanks, Austin.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
Bye bye. All right. Well, I mean, you know, that was her first podcast. She was, when I jumped on, she was like, when I asked her if she wanted to do it, she was like, I don't know. What am I going to say? I've never done this before. And I thought, I think you're going to kind of crush it. I think that you're going to have plenty to say. And she did. I was not disappointed at all. She really, really brought the heat. You should go follow her at UncertainlyCarly on Instagram. So it's uncertainly, the word uncertainly. Carly is spelled Carly. She's kind of blowing up right now. She had this big reel about leaving Mormonism, and now she's like got this big account where she's talking about faith departure. So go check her out, Uncertainly Carly on Instagram. We're on TikTok right now. We're live. We're doing the TikTok, the TikTok. Sweet Mama J's here. Jim Jam Jerome's here. Great people are here. We got a good conversation already brewing, talking about God and reconceptualizing God in the feed here. So let's see what we got. Just Pip Music says, I've literally never believed in a God, so to speak. So I have a question for you, Just Pip Music, and you can answer it here. What do you mean, so to speak? Is there a conception that you would accept, or a definition that you would say, well, to me, it's this. It's the feeling of biting into my favorite dessert. It's the feeling of falling in love. It's the part of me that recognizes truth. That when someone says something that I'm like, yeah, that's right. And I don't know how I know that's right. I know that's right. I know what that person is saying is like, that makes sense. Is there a part of you that resonates with that? Is there a definition that you'd be like, yeah, sure. If I had to call God something, and I'm talking about God as a broad concept here, as a broad idea here, not God, white beard, white robe. And if that is your God, if you're out there in the chat right now and that's your God, I'm interested in hearing from you too. But I'm talking about broad, wide concept God, you know, anthropological God, you know, where God as in why is this concept pervasive throughout history? The concept that people are getting at when they're talking about Zeus and Mars and all of that stuff, God. Is there anything that that resonates with you there? Let's see here. Timmy the Pirate asks, are you still Mormon? No. I left the Mormon church when I was 18 years old. I'm 33 now, so I've been out for 15 years. Ran into some Mormon missionaries the other day. My nieces were in town. They were visiting from Utah, and my nieces are LDS and live in an LDS household. Well, kind of a split household. Their parents are divorced, and their dad is not practicing, and their mom is. But we ran into, they were excited to see some Mormon missionaries in the parking lot for this grocery store that we were going to. Like, we pulled in and they saw the missionaries, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's the missionaries! And so I was like, let's go say hi. So we went over and talked to the missionaries, and the missionaries asked me which ward I was in. And I said, oh, I'm not LDS, but my nieces are. And it's weird. I haven't been a practicing member of the Mormon church for 15 years. It's still sometimes weird when I tell someone like I'm not Mormon or I'm not LDS in front of my Mormon family. Cause there's also a part of me that's like, well, I am Mormon. I was raised, I'm a Mormon guy from Utah, but functionally in this definition of the question they're asking me. I think the question you're asking now is no, I'm not. I don't believe any of the Mormon truth claims, and I don't pay tithing to the Mormon church, and I don't attend any Mormon church functions. And I actually believe that in many ways the Mormon church has been harmful for many people and has caused harm in many people's lives. I once had a friend say, and we talked about this in the episode where it's called How to Know If You're in a Cult. And I had a friend define cult as, he said the difference between a cult and a religion is a religion does a net good for the people who are in it, and a cult does a net harm for the people who are in it. I took issue with that definition because I was like, yeah, I guess though, if you could say like, hey, the Mormon church is for 70% of the people who are in the Mormon church, it's a very positive thing in their life. I would say 30% of people having a very negative experience with this thing is way too big of a percentage. Because then what I said about my definition of a cult was if the organization that you're a part of has ever destroyed someone's life, like ruined someone's life, it might not be a good thing. I don't know if it meets the criteria for being a cult, but I definitely question its goodness, its inherent goodness. If it's something that's like destroyed lives. And I know that Mormonism has like destroyed lives, has like ruined people's lives. So I know that there are a lot of people out there who get a lot of good out of it and who have a very positive experience with it. But I do think it's interesting that there are families that are torn apart by this. And that's a very weird piece of cognitive dissonance there. Really weird two-sided coin there. Music While Awake says, I went from a Christian personal God to more of a Taoist or Buddhist concept of our interconnectedness. Yeah, I think that that's similar for me too, Music While Awake. My route was Christian personal God to atheistic no God. Anyone who believes in any kind of concept of God is a fool who is playing themselves and who is just trying to make sense out of a senseless universe, very, very cynical, to now more of a concept of internal interconnectedness, that there is some kind of thing that is tethering me to you and you to me and making us all one in a sense. There is some kind of universal being that is not a, and when I say being, I don't mean a person or an entity. I mean a pervasive thing that courses through all that is. There's an episode called Brains where I talked to a neuroscientist about everything that we know about brains. And in that episode, we discussed the idea of us being the fact that I am the universe, that you are the universe. I think we talked about this in this episode, actually. I think I talked to Carly about this in this episode. But that if you and I are in the universe, we are the universe, and therefore we are the same thing. That kind of idea, I can't really define it any better than that. But I like that I don't have to. I think it's very exciting to be like, I don't need to really have a better definition than that, because I honestly think that just with that, most people who believe in God or some conception of God, even people who are atheists, would be like, I know what you're talking about. And it's a little bit more of a palatable definition, because I'm not saying, and if you don't accept my definition, you're a bad person who's going to hell. Because what good is that? I really don't understand the functionality of hell. I don't understand why there has to be coupled with your attempt to define God through some story or myth, this idea that if you don't accept my story or myth, you're suffering in eternity, for eternity in hell. I don't understand that. Let's see. Music While Awake says, first step was rejecting everything. Then I could find what works for me. Yeah, I think that that's right. I think that, well, at least for me, that's my experience. I think I relate to that of, first is, okay, well, if Mormonism's not true, then none of it's true. Because Mormonism was an end-all, be-all. It was a lock. I was rock-solid positive that Mormonism was true, that Joseph Smith did talk to God and Jesus in his backyard. And if that's true, it's the most important thing that's true in the entire universe. It has to be. If it's true that this teenager talked to God and Jesus in his backyard and like is bringing a message directly from them, and that they have ordained him to be the prophet, seer, and revelator for all mankind, if that's true, it's the most important thing that can be. So when that goes away, yeah, there is this sort of sense of, okay, well, nothing's true. I'm not going to trust anyone. I'm going to now approach all things from a lens of skepticism first. And at least that was my process. And then through that process, developing a conception or definition that works for me, which is what I found in AA, is this idea of like a God of your own understanding. What works for you? What makes sense for you? What language works for you to allow you to have a relationship with this thing? Cosmo Fountain says, I believe in kindness. That's my religion, and then puts a green heart. Not sure of the significance of green. I don't know if it's just your favorite color, or if that's something that you do as a symbol of that you're an environmentalist or what, or if I'm reading too much into that. But I agree. I very much like your religion and your belief system. And I think that Carly talks about that in the episode, that it's kind of like, call it whatever you want. And I genuinely am okay with you calling it whatever you want. I really, really am okay with anyone's conception of this idea. It's something we're all trying to grapple with. It's something we're all trying to define. Call it whatever you want. Just please be kind. If your conception of God requires you to be unkind and requires you to rebuke people that you view as sinners through the lens of your particular dogma, I'm not sure I like it very much, and I want you to be kinder with it, please. And if you want to obey those rules of that dogma and take that on for yourself, that's fine. I would also say be kind to yourself. Don't beat yourself up when you do something that is considered a sin. I mess up as a member of AA all the time. I forget to call my sponsor, or I forget that I'm supposed to have a meeting with my sponsor, and I call him the day of, and he's like, dude, you can't do this. You're supposed to reschedule with me if you can't make the meeting. And I mess up. It's important that I don't beat the crap out of myself when I do that. It's important that I don't flog myself and go, wow, I'm such a terrible person. I'm such a bad member of this organization. I don't deserve to be here. Because if I'm doing that, it's all counterproductive. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, which is developing self-love and self-esteem. I can acknowledge when I've made mistakes or when I've behaved in ways that don't align me with the kind of life I'm trying to have. And I can look at what the possible solutions to that behavior are, but I need to make sure that I'm not going too far into being unkind with myself. So being kind, it's equally important to be kind to others as it is to be kind with yourself when dealing with your particular belief set. Kiki Googly Eye says, church was the first place I learned self-doubt and being unkind to myself. I relate to this. A lot of people who are devout members of a specific religion or church might take umbrage at this comment and say, like, well, that's not our fault. Like, if your interpretation of the doctrine or the dogma or the rules was that you needed to, like, beat yourself up every time you make a mistake, no one's saying that. And I think that a lot of churches do try to encourage that you approach a repentant process with a lightness and a spirit of like self-forgiveness and self-love. But it's difficult because a lot of religions and churches do this where the actual words that are being said are full of kindness and love, but on the other side of it is this knowledge that if I don't do this just right, and if I don't do this absolutely correctly to the letter of how it's being preached, I'm kind of told that there is an eternity of fire and torture waiting for me. And not only is it I'm going to inflict this fire and torture on myself, but I'm going to ruin the afterlife for my entire family, because my family, who's doing it better than I am, they're all going to be in heaven and they're all going to be sad that I'm not there because I wasn't able to. So it's like, yes, it can be said from the pulpit. It can be said from pastors and leaders and ecclesiastical leaders. Hey, you know what? You need to be kinder to yourself and you need to go easier on yourself. But boy, the stakes are high, right? Like, it's hard to be easy on yourself when every mistake that you make is a knock against your eternal salvation. Like, the stakes are so high. It's so hard to not get very, very dramatic about this stuff and just be like, I made a mistake. You know, I had sex before marriage, but it's okay. I'm a human. I made a mistake. Like, that's another part of it is like, we have a lot of dogmatic rules created in organizational religions that don't really make any sense, telling people not to do things that they're definitely going to do and then making them feel bad about doing those things. Masturbation. You might as well tell people to feel bad about pooping. Like, everyone's going to masturbate. We know it. We know they're going to do it. So let's tell them all that when they do it, they're very bad and very dirty and very unclean and they should feel very bad about themselves. What a great idea. No. Let's not do that. Let's not tell them that this thing that they're definitely going to do is evil and that they're bad for doing it. You know, we sort of set people up for these situations where they're going to be very hard on themselves. There's a lot of internal contradictions and cognitive dissonance that exists in a lot of organized religions. And I didn't want to have this topic to just shit on organized religion or anything like that. I am interested in just sort of unpacking like where the conception of God becomes problematic, how the uses of the conception of God can become problematic and harmful, and ways in which you can live a life where you have a healthy relationship and conception of God that doesn't harm you or others. I think that's what's interesting about the concept to me. This is interesting. It's Quell, our good pal, It's Quell, says, I really dislike the over-ritualistic aspects of my family church. I always felt like an outsider. That's interesting, too. And that's a thing that a lot of organized religions have as well, is rituals. AA has rituals. Rituals absolutely can make newcomers and people feel like outsiders, absolutely. When you show up to a club that has sayings and handshakes and ways of speaking, and you don't know any of the terminology, it can be alienating and ostracizing. So I relate to that a lot. Because the ritual is also part of what sort of makes these organizations special in some regards. The fact that they all have their sort of in things that if you're in, you know, and the only way that you can know them is by committing to the organization and committing to the idea of the organization and the message and the mission of the organization. If you commit to that, then you can hope to one day be an insider who knows all the inside things and who speaks the lingo fluently and who knows all the handshakes and all the sayings fluently. I don't think that should ever be... And AA has this too, but I think lots of groups have this idea of like seniority equals morality, that someone who knows more of the in lingo than you or more of the terminology than you is better than you or is a better person than you. I think that can be problematic. Alex Rafi, I like this, says, I believe every living thing is just a fiber in one singular string of life. Let me try to run with that a little bit. Let me see if I get this right, Alex Rafi. This is my interpretation of what you just said. I like it very much. It's very poetic. I like the way you've worded it. I talk about this in the episode. There's this Marianne Williamson talk where she talks about how separate waves on the surface might see each other, that a wave coming into the shore sees a wave that is crashing and thinks, that's one wave, I'm another wave, and they see themselves as separate, not realizing that they're all underneath just one big body of water. And that's how people are, that's how we are. The first time I heard that, it was one of those moments where I was like, yes, that's true. Something inside of me went, yes, that's true. I know that that's true. I know that everything that is all part of one thing. To go further with your concept of every living thing is just a fiber in one singular string of life, I often think it's very likely and possible that that the universe as we know it, the observable universe, is just like a cell structure on a much larger being, and it just kind of goes out and out like that. So like maybe we're just like a patch of skin cells on the arm of some ginormous creature that's so large we can't even conceive of how large it is, the same way that we are so large to the average bacteria that a bacteria has no concept that it is a part of. If it has self-actualization at all, it has no concept that it is on my arm right now. It has no concept of me. I'm way, way too large of a thing for it to conceive of. And I could see very easily that that's what's going on here too, is that we are cell structure on some larger thing, and our cell is actually quite intelligent. So maybe we're some form of cancer that's like trying to gain intelligence and spread, and that's why we're trying to move out into space. I don't know. It's fun to think about, but that's where my brain goes, where you talk about everything is fibers on one larger, bigger thing, is like very literally, and if scientific way, we could be we could literally be like on the hair of a giant beast somewhere, and then that beast is on a larger system of cells that reach out. Yeah, and our conception of God is that we feel kind of the energy coming from that beast that we're on, and that's the energy that's pervading through all of us. Or we're, Earth is our cell, and we're feeling the energy coming from our cell, like whatever it is, I don't know. I don't know specifically what God is in that way, but I do think that there's a reason why everyone is trying so hard to define it, if that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, Sweet Mama Jay says, yeah, so like a patch of skin cells, whose skin are we on? What else is out there? Exactly, precisely. Neon Ray Tracer says, how do you perceive life as a whole? Do you mean specifically with that question, what is the purpose of life? Why is life? Or like, what's actually happening? Is it a simulation or is it real? I don't have hard feelings one way or another about whether we're living in a simulation or whether we're living in an actual factual hard reality and this is all there is. I don't. My feeling on life as a whole when it comes to those questions is I don't think it's important for me to know the answer to those questions, which is weird. It seems oxymoronical, because if it's not important for me to know the answer to those questions, then why do I have a brain that asks them? Why are we here having this conversation if it's not important for us to figure out the answer? Why should I even be capable of conceiving of such a question if it's not important for me to seek out an answer to the question? I think that what Buddhists and thinkers like Eckhart Tolle would say is that is me subconsciously identifying with my mind. My mind is a problem solver. My mind is utilitarian. It's a tool. It's a function of my body. It's a thing that I have in order for me to figure out how to build things and sort through complex problems, but it's not actually who I literally am. And so I'm identifying with my mind when I'm thinking like, well, how come I can ask the question if I'm not meant to know the answer? But it's only my mind that's asking the question. My mind simply just rattles off questions all the time. What should I do today? What should I eat? What should I wear? Where should I go? Why am I not being more productive today? My mind is just constantly going, but my mind is not literally who I am. I am, and this is not me speaking, this is kind of what Eckhart Tolle would say, and I tend to like this definition a lot, but I am simply the essence of being. I am just the source energy. I am God. I am, and so are you, so are we all. I am the universe. I am just here. I am just this. So in a very abstract, esoteric way, that's how I feel about life as a whole, is that I am this kind of eternal being, and my body and my mind are tools for me to experience consciousness through this different, weird, myopic lens. I don't know why I have to experience it this way. That's my philosophical answer to that question. How do I feel about life? My more grounded in like utilitarian way of describing life is it's like, well, I'm here for a short time. I have people around me that I love. I should try to help people if I can. I should try to be of service. The purpose of my life is to like figure out ways to be of service to the people around me. And to connect with people, to have connections, to have meaningful moments with people, to try to find moments of beauty and to try to appreciate moments of sorrow, and just to try to like experience it. That the purpose of life is just to have a life, to be here, to get to do it. All of it. The good, bad, the boring, the exciting. And boy, I don't know. Maybe I'm talking right now and you're having that experience of nodding your head and going, yes, I agree. I think that yes. And you don't know why. You don't know what specifically it is that's leading you to nod your head and say, yes, I agree. But there's something inside of you that's going, I think this is right on some level. I think this is true. Or maybe you're listening to me and going, this guy is way off base. God is Allah, and Allah is going to punish this man for his blasphemous views. I don't know. Kiki Googly Eye says, I'm so happy I'm here today. Reminders that self-discovery and personal growth is its own religion. I'm gonna wrap up the TikTok portion on that comment because I like that very much. I think that that is kind of the theme that I'm trying to get at with this episode. That whatever it is that you're doing out there when it comes to God and the concept of God, the whole idea is that you're trying to enact some process of self-discovery and personal growth. That you're trying to create a story and a mythology that allows you to be a better person, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And if whatever your concept of God does that, if atheism does that for you, if agnosticism does that for you, if Buddhism does that for you, if just having sort of a more loose, free definition of that does that for you, if it allows you to be a kinder, better person who is finding ways to be of service, who minimizes the harm that they do to others, who when they do harm, recognizes it and does what they can to make amends and right the harm done. If that's what's happening, then I think you're on the right track. I think. Thank you so much. So many great questions and comments today. This was a really, really wonderful and edifying conversation for me to have. Stay on the chat. I want to keep chatting with you guys after I get off the podcast, but let's wrap up the podcast portion here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, looking up Austin Archer wherever you stream music. My music and this podcast are mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to themarmalademusic.com and tell Chris that you listen to his work on People Pleaser, and he'll give you 20% off your first audio project. Themarmalademusic.com. Tell Chrissy Bear that you love his work over here on People Pleaser. He'll give you 20% off your first project. It's a fantastic deal. You should go do it. Okay, Sweet Mama J is the moderator of our TikTok portion of the show. We love you so much, Sweet Mama J. Thanks for always being here. I think that's it for the episode. Cool. We'll see you next week. Take care of each other. Be good out there. All right, go Jazz. Bye.